Welcome back to In the Moment. We take a look today at South Dakota's 92nd legislative session with SDPB's Keely Bultina and Lee Strubinger. Keely is with me in the studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Lee is joining us via phone from the Capitol Building in Pierre. Keely, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Lee, thanks for stopping by as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, let's start in the State House. One of the major promises lawmakers offered at the start of the session was the repeal and replacement of the voter-approved initiated Measure 22. Lee, did lawmakers deliver?
Well, there were, keep in mind, there were several aspects to initiated Measure 22. Four, I guess, major parts. And those would be, lobbying reform, campaign finance limits, ethics reforms, and a publicly funded campaign finance system. Now, there was pretty much zero appetite on both sides to establish a publicly funded campaign finance system, and many lawmakers said that IM-22 was just an ethics package disguised as a way to create this publicly funded campaign finance system. And with the revenue shortfall this session, there was real little legislative will to make that happen.
All right. What about the lobbying restrictions that voters wanted? Did their legislators replace that part of IM-22?
Right. Well, there are I guess there was one bill that got signed by the governor was Senate Bill 131. And it's a 2-year lobbying ban for elected officers, department or agency heads, division directors, or even the highest paid employee of a department or agency. Similar almost to the exact language of initiated Measure 22. There are two, there's one still waiting to be heard in a conference committee, and we've talked about them in previous weeks. The one that's still waiting to be heard is Senate Bill 54, which sets a lot of those campaign finance limits, and that conference is going to happen around 2 p.m. Central Time. And as it is currently, the bill is sort of cleanup language that was proposed by the Secretary of State, sort of trying to defining, who, like, when certain people disclose how much they get, and who gave what and where, and more disclosures, more reporting, and that sort of thing. But the campaign finance limits themselves are set at pre-IM-22 levels. So basically, what they were for the 2016 election. There was another bill that just got out of conference committee not even an hour ago, and it's the bill to set up the Government Accountability Task Force. And it's been amended several times, and it's now going to just look more strictly at campaign finance this summer. The House narrowed the scope of the bill for the task force to focus on campaign finance limits. They were going to look at ethics, lobbying reform, and many of those other things, but
we might have
four of them to be from a minority party, Democrats see that as a palatable bill.
All right, Lee. Do we know whether the governor plans to sign the bills that remain if lawmakers can agree on those final versions?
Well, there was a tweet from the governor yesterday. And that the legislature sort of gave final passage to some ethics reform bills that he says replace portions of IM-22, which indicates that he would plan on signing them.
Yeah, well, one of those that we haven't mentioned is the Government Accountability Board. That's House Bill 1076. And the Government Accountability Board is composed of four members appointed by the governor. They are former or retired circuit court judges or Supreme Court justices. A board member can't be a lawmaker. Their terms are 5 years long. No more than two of the appointed members can be of the same political party. And the state Senate must confirm all of them. So it's part of the replacement package. It's not quite the ethics commission from initiated Measure 22, which would have overseen things like campaign finance restrictions.
And that board, keep in mind, is different from the Government Accountability Task Force that we were talking about earlier.
All right, I'm tracking it, but that doesn't cover all of the repeal and replace for IM-22, right, Lee?
Right, yeah. There are two other bills that the governor tweeted about that he says are important replacement mechanisms for IM-22 that deal with embezzlement and whistleblowing. So Senate Bill 27 looks to strengthen embezzlement statutes. It's a bill that the Attorney General brought, and basically gives the Attorney General additional tools to go after public employees or public officials who knowingly use funds or property that has been entrusted to that person, and their use would result in a direct financial benefit. It's basically saying that this is theft. It's not just a conflict of interest. There's another one, House Bill 1052, which is whistleblower protection. Basically, it says a state worker who in good faith reports wrongdoing in a particular agency or what have you can't be retaliated against for bringing up a claim of wrongdoing. Now, Initiated Measure 22 set up an anonymous hotline and website for state workers to report wrongdoing, but that didn't make it into the replacement of IM-22 this year.
When IM-22 originally passed, we heard some uproar about the caps it put on gifts that lobbyists give to lawmakers. That was the talk of the town before the session kicked off. What's the status of that limit?
Right. Voters approved IM-22's lobbying gift ban at $100 total each year. There wasn't really a ban on gifts from lobbyists before IM-22. And now they're working on House Bill 1073, which sets it again at a $100 per calendar year, but that does not count food or drinks. The latest amendment eliminated a meal limit. It was at a cap of no more than $75 for one meal, but that restriction is gone now.
And I must point out that lawmakers went even further and adjusted that overall limit for the year for cost of living. So on this lobbying gift ban, they acknowledge that each year money is worth just a little bit less, so they should be able to maintain the actual value of it. And when they so they did that here. But when we're looking to education funding, it's likely K-12 schools won't receive an increase for inflation, even though it's technically state law. So we've got a lot of this inflation factor discussion going on right now.
All right, Keeley, lawmakers have a day and a half to balance that budget and education funding, since you brought it up, is a key issue in that.
You know, lower than expected revenues mean that lawmakers just have fewer dollars to distribute in the budget. So they're not recommending a cut for K-12 education, but they are saying we're thinking a 0% increase. So even with the changes last year to the funding formula and increased sales tax for teacher pay, it remains law that schools receive money to cover the cost of inflation. But lawmakers are able to bypass that. They can change it and not give schools anything more than what they had in last year's budget. I reached out to the governor's office, and Tony Van Huysen told us, you know, on the inflationary increase for schools, he says the governor, of course, would like to give inflationary increases to schools, Medicaid providers, and state employees, but his top priority is to balance the budget, and we can't spend money that we don't have. And that's something that we've heard from other top, specifically Republican lawmakers, as they discuss this change. Still, some other lawmakers are concerned that schools are going to have to cut teacher pay to reallocate money to other areas of their budgets. And that doesn't allow them to meet the accountability standards the legislature set up to make sure that they're boosting teacher pay closer to the average goal. I do know that the South Dakota Education Association would, of course, welcome, an increase, but I guess they're happy that we're not going backwards.
So what about this issue about the half penny sales tax that's no longer going to teacher salaries?
Well, it is, but they're considering removing, at least one vote has tried to remove the language from state law that requires certain percentages go to K-12 education to tech schools into property tax relief. So last year, as part of adding this half penny to sales tax to benefit teacher salaries, South Dakota dedicated 63% to increasing teacher salaries by school districts, 34% to reducing property tax levies for general education for all classes of property, and then 3% to increasing instructor salaries to competitive levels at post-secondary technical institutes. So one of the Senate Bill 35 strikes that language from the law. We're back to the governor's office with Tony Van Huysen. He says every dime that was committed last year to teacher salaries is still going there. He says the reason that they want to take that out, the reason it was there was to make sure that new money that was coming into the state budget went to those places. But right now, that language is no longer necessary. And he argues that because revenues are down this year, it could be read to require cuts to schools if it remains on the books. So he thinks it needs to go away. Still, people are concerned that without that, the money dumps straight into the general fund, which could mean that lawmakers in the future have the chance to take education funding lower because there's no mandate that a certain amount of the revenue from that half penny sales tax goes to education. And the if you've been in South Dakota, you've heard the video lottery argument, right? That's what people bring up when it comes to this. They reference video lottery approving it, that they were promised the money would go to schools, and now it just pours into state coffers, and they don't see that direct connection. Advocates of keeping that in want that direct connection from the half penny to education. It's worth noting, too, that one lawmaker, Representative Larry Roden, who spoke during the debate, said, you know, schools should be thankful they don't have to cut. He pointed to farmers and ranchers who have taken huge pay cuts over the last year because of falling prices. And, you know, the lagging ag economy is what's contributing to this budget hole. So Senate Bill 35 is in conference committee. The bottom line, there's just no easy fix here.
All right. We saw several instances in committees and on the chamber floor where lawmakers sought to eliminate regulations they didn't think were necessary or perhaps outdated. Can you give us some examples of what you saw there, Lee?
Yeah, sure. One that comes to mind is the cannabidiol bill. What lawmakers did was they removed cannabidiol from the state definition of marijuana, and basically, it's also known as CBD, and it's been used to treat, you know, pediatric epilepsy, you know, children who are having, you know, maybe upwards of 200 seizures a day. It kind of helps treat that, and lawmakers wanted to legalize CBD pending FDA approval. For medicine for children in the state. Another thing that happened that was kind of interesting, during press conferences last week, Speaker Mark Mickelson was asked about any successes that happened this legislative session. And he pointed to three retirement law bills, which he says will have an actuarial savings of $1.2 billion. Those kind of flew under the radar of what else was happening day to day with, you know, the IM-22 stuff and all that.
Yeah. And there were other bills that came up, too, that were about reducing regulations that, I mean, we talked about some of them during the session, but things like South Dakota has changed the rules for certified nurse practitioners and nurse midwives to practice more independently or to be licensed more independently while they practice as part of a group. Or even things like allowing natural hair braiders to work without full cosmetology licenses because they don't need training in all of these other areas. So why require them to go through all of this work and all of this money when they can do that without it and, you know, charge sales tax and benefit the economy.
All right, last chance here. If you're just joining us, before we get to that, you're listening to In the Moment. My guests are actually Keely Bultina and Lee Strubinger, both journalists for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're doing a recap of the legislative session this year. So, Lee, last chance. Keely, you go first. What's the biggest topic yet to be decided that we haven't talked about that we need to watch as lawmakers craft their final days? Keely?
We're watching Senate Bill 176. That's the protest bill that we are talking about. It could apply at any time, but it's worth noting that it's happening in an environment when the Keystone XL pipeline is moving forward through South Dakota. And lawmakers on this bill, when they've talked about it, repeatedly reference things that are happening in North Dakota during the protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So it's not specifically targeted pipeline protests, but if this passes, people who would protest Keystone XL or any other hot button issue like uranium mining in the Black Hills or social issues or whatever, this changes the way protesters can demonstrate in South Dakota. You may have heard of the government safety zones early on. The original bill had zones that people could not enter or they would be committing a criminal trespassing crime. But the bill has seen a lot of changes. Those are gone. The governor now has the ability, along with the sheriff of a county, to request protest restriction. And if they do that, law enforcement can prohibit a group of 20 or more people from congregating on school or public land. The chief justice can make it easier for outside counsel to come into the state for criminal defense. And it prohibits people from obstructing traffic or congregating on highway right-of-ways.
Right. And Senate Bill 176, you know, started out with an emergency clause, and that got stripped twice. It got stripped when it was in the Senate, and then it got stripped in the House. Democrats opposed it because they saw it as infringing upon freedom of speech. And there are some conservative Republicans who opposed it because they kind of saw it as a power grab by the governor. Since neither House or Senate could get a two-thirds majority to pass the bill, it was reconsidered, and they removed the emergency clause to pass it on. And so with the emergency clause gone, that means that the public can refer the law because they have time to before it takes effect on July 1st. And based on what I've heard so far, there's rumblings of organizing a referral of the law. And if a referral makes it onto the ballot, that means voters could decide whether they want the law, and it wouldn't go into effect till about November of 2018. There was a conference committee on this bill also about an hour ago, and the committee re-added the emergency clause. I was in a different conference committee that was being held at the same time, but Democrat Majority Leader Spencer Hawley voted in favor to send the bill down to both chambers, and that could signal an appetite by House Democrats, at least, to pass the bill.
Mm-hmm. And so Lee referenced it, you know, conference committees are meeting today. Lawmakers have to approve everything by the end of the day tomorrow, although let's just remember, they follow the state house rules, but they also make the rules, and they can also suspend the rules, so anything's possible.
SDPB's Keely Bultina, thanks so much for being here, Keely.
You're welcome.
Lee Strubinger, we'll wait for more word from you and Pierre. Thanks for being there.
Hey, thanks.